Coming to you from various places around the world, this is the Global Exhibitor Podcast, the podcast designed to help exhibitors succeed internationally.
Reduced graphic. Yeah, nobody comes to a show to read. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they want to read, they take a book.
I love it. I've been saying that for a long time, but I haven't heard it put in those terms.
Your host for the Global Exhibitor Podcast is Jeff Hanna, a designer, entrepreneur, business strategist, industry thought leader, and student of world cultures based in the United States. Here's your host, Jeff Hanna.
I'm really excited today to be here with Uta Goretzky, who is the executive director of IFIS. We're actually broadcasting today live from a really nice location. Would you say that?
Oh yeah, it is. It's tremendous to look at outside to the desert.
Yes, in Tucson, Arizona. And a couple of days ago, we spent a large part of the day in a Jeep going out into the Sonoran Desert, which was a lot of fun, bouncing around inside of the back of the Jeep.
Well, my back is still hurting.
That's too bad, but it was a lot of fun.
I thoroughly
enjoyed it. It was really nice. I wanted to start with, what do you do at IFIS as executive director, and what is really the purpose of IFIS?
You know, we call IFIS the Global Collaboration Network, and this is pretty much what we are doing. We try to be a platform for companies, usually medium size, and we provide the opportunity that companies meet each other. So if they have a customer going abroad from the US to China, to India, to Germany, to I don't know, they know already a partner they can contact to, and they know that they can trust them because they have met them before. This is actually the main target we are doing, and we are going out with our work for. And of course, we are doing some other things like educational programs, and we do some lobby work and things an association always does, but mainly we are a platform to raise the business for and make exhibitors happy.
And you're a federation, but you have members who are associations as part of IFIS, as well as direct or member companies.
We have both. IFIS was founded in 84 by like 10 national associations. And well, they figured out it, and it was more a European theme because they there was a regulation popping up about security on trade shows, and they want to put fairs together with conventions and trade shows. So you had to prove the same things as a roller coaster should. And this was the moment when all European national associations stood up and said, hey, you guys are crazy. We are not a roller coaster, we are an exhibition booth. This was the moment when IFIS was founded, and the American Association joined pretty early. Ingrid Boyd was leading in this direction. She was pretty connected to the European market due to the fact that her parents were German. And well, this was how it happened. And then back in 2008, we experienced the situation that there were a lot of countries without any associations, or after 9/11, a lot of countries losing their national associations due to the depression. Then we said, okay, but we still want to connect these companies. And this was the moment when we changed the statutes and we allowed companies to join IFIS beside these national associations.
Okay, I imagine that also expanded the membership quite a bit as well.
Yes, of course. It was before, it were like 40 national associations, mm-hmm. and no membership companies. And well, the association were paying quite a bit, and now the association paid just a little amount, or even no fee, but the company paying the membership fee.
Okay. So do you find there are a number of direct exhibitors who use IFIS as a platform to find companies overseas?
Well, you know, our target is to connect exhibit houses, but
To one another.
Yeah, to one another, so that it runs through you to find the right partner. But what we experience on our website, when we look at Google Analytics, we have so many visitors just entering our membership list there, and then pick 2-3 out of one region, and then they're leaving our website, so which shows us that they are getting into direct contact with these companies. And we don't force it, but business is happening this way. We don't stand in between.
So what are some of the major issues that you're working on through the platform of IPIS in terms of what's happening globally, you know, any kind of major issues, whether it be sustainability or whatever, that or initiatives that you guys are working on in the industry right now?
You know, there are still quite a few things on lobby work we are doing in the EU. For example, posting of workers is a nightmare. So if you go as an exhibit house from Germany to France, you do have to do an incredibly amount of paperwork. Same to Austria or Italy, France, to mention the main exhibit countries in Europe. This awful amount of paperwork makes the situation really expensive to follow with your customer shows, which are moving around, yeah? We have some shows which are 1 year in Germany, next year in France, and the other year in Spain. But you have to prove payment slips, you have to prove that you are okay with working hours, you have to prove that you're over the minimum wage, you have to prove crazy things, that all your people are social secured, and they have to take this information in the, not in their language, but in the language of the country they are going to. So you have your contract in German, in French, in Spanish, in Italian, in I don't know, which is a nightmare for each company. And we are making the EU aware of this and try to find solutions like a social security card, which is working all over Europe. This okay. is one issue. Mm-hmm. Or looking right now at Las Vegas with an upcoming fee for double stock. I just learned.
For the double decks?
Yeah. For the double decks. And of course, we are stepping in the area. On the one hand side, we will inform our members that this is occurring, because I'm sure that quite a few don't know going to CES that this is, that they need this approval of of somebody being situated in Las Vegas or around.
Yeah.
And
which can be quite expensive, as we talked about earlier today.
This can be quite expensive, and this is hurting our industry to my mind, because exhibitors are spending so much money on different things they don't see worth in. And then there are another 10,000, 15,000 K you have to pay. And you ask yourself, what for? Just for somebody stamping your approved plans. And so things like this, we of course step in and try to help not just our members, but the whole industry, and try to help exhibitors at this point, because we are all on the same page.
I know we talked a little bit about drayage and material handling in a session we were in earlier today, and I did see this myself a few years ago, where there were a few cases where the organizer was an American company doing shows in Germany. Specifically, they were trying to implement drayage at those shows. Are you seeing that happening much at all, or is that kind of isolated to the U.S. as far as having drayage?
Lucky to say that this is just happening in the US, but you know, there will be some smart guys finding other solutions to raise some fees, which they can charge to the exhibit houses or the exhibitors, because the exhibitors houses have to charge these fees to their customers, because somebody has to pay.
Yeah.
And this is really scaring me, due to the fact that it destroys our industry, and it destroys the advantages exhibitions have.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you are happy to pay if you know that you get the revenue out of it. But what organizers are not able to prove is that if you attend a trade show, that you meet this amount of customers, prospect customers, that you meet... Yeah, that in average you have a revenue of, I don't know.
Yeah.
And as long as they are not able to do this, they cannot ask for fees and fees and fees, to my mind.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. And I think people understand they're willing to pay for the delivery of the crates to the booth space and storage of the crates and all those activities. It's the amount of money you're paying for that becomes unreasonable, because those fees are covering all the carpet in the aisles and everything else that the general contractor is doing for the organizer at the show. So it's the amount, I think, is becomes unrealistic.
On the other hand side, if you compare to exhibit in Las Vegas at at a medium-sized show, not talking about CES, or if you're exhibiting in Germany, the price is almost the same. Yeah, it's roughly around $250 a square meter, so $25 a square feet. Up to 40, depending on which show you are. So it's comparable. But in Europe, you have these carpet in the aisles and these counters at the entrance desk. They are included in this rental of the space. So what's happening with this money you're paying to rent this area? Yeah, it has to go somewhere.
Right.
It's not just disappearing. So yes, I know that American show organizers and exhibit houses and even exhibit houses are more profitable than they are in the UK and the rest of Europe. But still, there are fees which to my mind are unreasonable.
I agree, and I hope it goes away, just for the record, but we'll see.
Well, keep our fingers crossed.
I think it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of pressure and a lot of work to see that and some good solutions and change perceptions, but it's been so ingrained, and it did kind of make me nervous a few years ago when I heard about a few cases where there were shows in Germany actually trying to do drayage, and I was just like, oh no, this is not good. And people in Asia were talking about it earlier, but I think they're concerned mostly because of their clients from Asia coming into the U.S. and dealing with it. Because, as you know, most of the cases with everybody else in the world, I mean, you as an exhibit house, you give a fixed price to clients for the labor, for everything. It's a turnkey fixed fee price. But in the U.S., it's quite different, where it's very open-ended, so you have overtime charges and all the drayage, and everything can be variable, and it makes it really difficult, especially for, say, a company in Asia who's an exhibit house who has given their client a fixed fee, and then suddenly they're getting 30-40% more cost of things they didn't expect in the U.S., so it makes it really hard for them to be able to go back and charge their client for that. It's almost impossible.
Yeah, you know, I just visited the UFI convention, which is the convention about where the organizers are globally associated, and they did a survey, and the outcome was that they asked, you know, if there is an organizer and they are able to overcharge you, how likely would they do this? And they were like 13% saying, no, they won't do it. And some said, I don't know. And 60% said, yes, they will. And in the US, it was even 66%. So two-thirds of the exhibitor believe that the organizer will overcharge them if they have the ability to. And this is kind of scary. And we are in a face-to-face industry, and we are doing trust. This is what we are doing there. We are building up trust to our prospect customers or to our customers. And now you bear this in mind. It's kind of the picture doesn't fit.
No. But since we're on that topic, several people this week have pointed out that the general contractor is getting the finger pointing at the general contractor, but it might actually be the organizer who is really mostly responsible, because they're demanding that the general contractor give them all these things for free, like registration desks, offices, signage, all these things. And they have to pay for all that somewhere, and that ends up getting paid for by the drayage. Speaking of organizers, though, in Germany, many of the exhibit halls, the venues like the Messe Hanover or Messe Dusseldorf, have their own shows. They are organizers as well. And that's a different model than what we are accustomed to really anywhere else in the world, except for where that's been happening, where the Germans have exported that model in a few other places, I believe. How well do you think that model works as far as having the organizer and the venue be one?
You know, the situation is even kind of worse, because it's the city and the federal state which owns the showground. So it's in general, the city of Hanover is organizing Hanover Messe. So they are really linked to it, which has advantages and which has disadvantages. On the one hand side, they are able to be involved in infrastructure in a much better way than if you have a liberal show organizer. They just move. Yeah, they go from Chicago to Las Vegas or from Las Vegas to New York. But if this is happening in cities like Hanover, they can say, okay, we have to do something with our autobahn, or we have to have a train connection. Things like this make it easier. On the other hand side, they want some return on investment from the showground into the city. And this limits the marketing and the outgoing ideas of creating shows and doing some investments, long-term investments. Of course, not all organizers are really into long-term investments, but they are liberal to decide if they want to do it or if they don't want to do it. What we are seeing right now in Hanover, for example, is that they changed CeBIT. They missed some changes in the industry. Most of their exhibitors are now in South by Southwest. They like this festival much better than Hanover Messe. Okay, being in sunny Texas instead of rainy Hanover might be an issue too. But still, you have exhibitors who are looking for different kind of customers and visitors there. So they changed it from being in March to August. They tried to create a festival, and everybody thought, yeah, okay, for the first year, it's difficult. At least it needs 3 years to continue this and to build up this kind of festival happening. Having concerts, having things happening, having kind of other formats of presentation, open spaces, all these kind of creative things you can do on a convention, on a showground. And after 1 year, they all of a sudden decided revenue was so low, we just stop it. So one of the biggest brand in the show market is just gone. There is a CeBIT Asia still happening, but there is no show in Hanover.
It's done.
And you know, as long as we all know, when it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they created a brand for 40 years.
That was like one of the biggest shows ever when I started the industry.
Yeah. And it was tremendous. They had even three decks booths due to the fact that they couldn't rent any more space.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden,
it's gone.
And this is happening due to the fact that the owner want this revenue and they are not willing to pay and pay and pay. And then all of a sudden, crazy decisions like this are taken.
So maybe the conclusion is there are some advantages and some disadvantages to that model.
Yeah, and these venue owners are renting their spaces to show organizers as well. So
So
they have some shows which are not their own.
Yeah, which is good because they're great venues, obviously. I remember the first time I went to Hanover was to Hanover Fair, and I spent 3 days at least walking the convention center, and all I was doing was taking pictures of the exhibits just from a design standpoint. I'm certain I didn't even cover the whole grounds in 3 days. No meetings or anything, just walking around, and I didn't see it all. Amazingly huge. What are some of the trends that you see happening globally from your perspective?
You know, I think there are some disruptions in our industry. One thing is we really, really face globalization, and we have to be aware of this. Just 1 month ago, so November 2019, Shenzhen, the showground, had a soft opening with their first show. Mm-hmm. It's the world's largest showground now. It's bigger than Hanover. It's over 500,000 square meters, so 5 million square feet. So it's huge. It's one direction. It's 1.8 kilometers. So you need more than 3 days.
Yeah. mind-boggling, isn't it?
It is, and well, we are talking about China, and if the government decides that there will be a show, then there will be a show, and then they will push people to exhibit there, and they will push people to visit. And as we all know, the market is changing. China, as we learned in this at the DPA convention, is now changing into a well middle market, people with money being able to buy things. So, and as we all know, people, the provider is going where the customer is. So at the end, we will have car companies, we will have even Apple exhibiting someplace because they want to continue to sell their product to the Chinese market. So we will have changes because the marketing budgets won't raise. We will just have changes in the markets, and our exhibitors will spend this money not in US or in Europe or in all at all shows anymore. They get smaller. But they will go to these new markets with these new customers. Second thing I'm experiencing is sustainability is becoming more and more an issue. We have, especially in Europe, strong movements of young people, Fridays for Future. They just blocked one Saturday at the German car show. Well, they were not affecting against the car show. They were affecting against car and the automotive companies. But still, there were 25,000 people on a German autobahn blocking on a Saturday whole Frankfurt. Yeah? And, well, this generation is getting more involved, which I really like.
Yeah.
But they are involved in, hey, we have to save our planet.
Yeah.
And we have to do a carbon reduction. And what are you doing? What are you providing? You have the techniques. Why don't you use them? And this is something which will affect us as well, asking us, why do you produce something for 4 days and then just throw it away? Why can't you reuse it? So we have to be aware of the situation. We have to have answers. To my mind, it's still worth being on a trade show because you have the chance to do much more contacts instead of a salesperson and traveling around.
Sure.
But still, it will affect and it will change our mind on this. We are pretty bad on using our data. We are collecting data, which is tremendously, and Google and Amazon, they are the ones which are really using them. But at a showground, it's easy to track everybody who's using a mobile phone and has Wi-Fi on can be tracked on the showground. We don't follow the movements. We don't know which is the attractive part of our booth, which works, which doesn't work. We don't use this data we are able to collect. And this is one thing we really, really have to be aware of. And artificial intelligence will even help this to make it more usable. Yeah?
Yeah. So generally in Europe, different views about privacy than we have in the US about using data, even collecting from who's visiting your website and all the URL trackings. Just wondering if you see that as a big privacy issue at all, if you are tracking people's geolocation in a whole.
You know, we have GDPR. Yes, of course. This is something where you really have to ask people if you can store their data. But I'm not talking about personalized data. Yeah,
okay.
I'm just talking about the big data and the flow of people in a hall.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can take my phone and your phone and collect all of this, and then at the end you see streams where people are going, and you can use this data because this doesn't have anything to do with privacy. Yeah. So yes, we do have an GDPR issue in whole Europe, and we have to be careful. And we cannot go out just because we found a telephone number somewhere, an IP address somewhere.
Yeah.
But still, there is a chance to collect this information and make booths more attractive.
I like that. It's good thinking, though. It's not something I hear people talking about much in terms of here or anywhere, really, but that's a good point you raise about collecting that information. I don't know. I mean, design of exhibits to the hall layouts to variety of things.
You can do this in shop fitting, and you can do this in a booth as well. Why don't you change, try by yourself a booth and change every day? Yeah, color, setting, and try. And say, okay, this worked best.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the competence of consulting, and this will help tremendously.
Yeah.
And right now, it's cheap. You don't have to do any eye tracking anymore, which was developed in the 80s and which was not working because it was tremendously expensive. But we have Wi-Fi spots all over the places, so why don't we use them?
Good point. How important do you think is understanding cultural differences for people that are exhibiting internationally?
Oh, of course you have to understand. And even if you try to prepare yourself well, there are certain points you're going to learn the hard way. Well, you have one ability I think this is good to have, and this is the ability to listen. Yeah. Okay, you have to ask questions and then look for the answers.
Yeah.
And then take your conclusions out of it. But Europe and America doesn't seem to me very different. Yeah. We have some common culture.
Yeah.
If you're exhibiting in the US, you have to spend at least 3 years to build up trust. Mm-hmm. And then you will gain new customers. But you have to be aware of this amount of money you have to invest, which is different in Europe. You can get a customer right away because he likes your product.
That's different than my perception too on working in Germany, because just as an example, say even within Germany, if you're working with another German, it takes time for them to build trust and all of that. They're not as immediately going to warm up to working with somebody, but I don't know, maybe that's just a perception by some and it may not really be true.
It depends on if you're talking about product or if you're talking about service. You have a product like this bottle and you like this bottle and then you take it. What's the disadvantage of taking it if it's from a German or from an Italian? You like it, you take it. If you're talking about long-term relationship services, things like this, then it changes a bit. But still, you really have to invest if you want to exhibit in the US. And to have success in the U.S., you can exhibit, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Obviously, you're not at every show in the U.S., but do you see some common mistakes that they're making when they come to the U.S. and vice versa, the kind of mistakes you see Americans or other people making when they come into Europe?
Well, in Europe, you have to take much more care of hospitality.
Right.
Yeah, it's common to have drinks. It's common to have even small snacks. Even if it's just some fruit or so, or some cookies, but you provide. You have to have lighting at your
lighting.
Exhibit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has to be kind of shiny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to highlight the points you want to show. Reduce graphic. Yeah. Nobody comes to a show to read.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If they want to read, they take a book.
I love it. I've been saying that for a long time, but I haven't heard it put in those terms.
Yeah.
But you're right.
Yeah. But I believe this is the same in the U.S. as in Europe.
Especially in healthcare. I mean, they just put like everything. And it's like the TV commercials. You have to have the disclaimer in the TV commercials. This drug is not for everyone. If you know. Okay, well, your doctor shouldn't be prescribing it for you in the first place if it's not for you. Yeah.
So less written information, focus on highlights. Yeah. You don't have to have your whole product range there. What's new? What's different?
Yeah.
What's your USP? However you define your USP.
Right.
Focus on that. But this is common. So, and coming to the US, Europeans are rather shy. They stay in their booth and wait that people are entering. You can spend some lonely hours there, although the hall is packed. So you really have to be aggressive to go outside, to talk to people, and find out who's the right lead. And you spend less time with wrong leads in the US than you do in Europe. You don't kick anybody out of your booth if you feel, okay, this is not my customer.
Right.
In the US, you just let them go. Mm-hmm. I think these are the major differences.
That's good. Just to talk a little bit about you personally before we wrap up, how you got in the industry. I know you were really involved in FAMOP, mm-hmm. which is the German Association. And for the life of me, I could never know what FAMOP stands for in German, but maybe you can tell me.
It's tremendously sexy.
Okay.
It's Fachverband Messe und Ausstellungsbau. So you, So it says in general, Association of Stand Building.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I studied economics, and during my studies, I worked quite a lot on trade shows to earn some additional money to do some travel. I liked this industry from the beginning, and so I tried to find a job in the exhibition industry. And then, by coincidence, about some contacts my father had, was a colleague of him or so, said, well, this association is looking for somebody. Why don't you go out there and ask them if you fit in their team? And this is how I ended up in an industry which I'm working now almost 30 years in.
Wow, that's great. You just never know what's going to happen, huh, when you're starting out your career, where you're going to end up.
You know, and it was really love at first sight.
Yeah.
And because otherwise I wouldn't do this, what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, and it's a unique industry, isn't it?
It is.
There is a bond, I think, that happens over the trade show, face-to-face marketing world that people understand. You know, when they're in it.
So, oh yeah, and you know, the good thing about trade shows is you hate it or you love it.
Yeah.
It takes like 6 weeks to know. If you're there after 3 months, you will stay there somehow for your entire life. So make sure that
that's a shorter time than I normally stay 1 year, but 3 months. Okay.
Most people are at least trying to get out of it after 3 months.
Yeah, you'll know for sure if you love it or hate it. Yeah. Well, this has been a great conversation. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff. It was a pleasure.
We like to remind people that all business is conducted within the context of culture. So each episode provides insights to help marketers understand the cultures they're trying to reach and strategies for building bridges across cultural divides. If you like the Global Exhibitor podcast, please share it with others, subscribe to it, and rate it on iTunes. We greatly appreciate the feedback. Please also check out our website and blog at www.globalexhibitor.com. And finally, if you or someone you know would make an interesting guest on this podcast, please let us know by sending an email to guest@globalexhibitor.com. And until next time, thank you for listening.